This is GM Authority Weekly, episode 59, recorded on February 18th, 2011. The Global Buzz. GM Authority Weekly is brought to you by the GM Authority News Desk. For the latest independent General Motors news, analysis, and a whole lot more, visit GMAuthority.com. You can subscribe to this podcast for free. Try searching for GM Authority Weekly in the iTunes Store. It's time for GM Authority Weekly, and we're going to cover the latest General Motors news and provide some analysis and context along the way. From Colorado Springs, Colorado, I'm your host, Alex Luft, and on the line from Detroit, Michigan, or somewhere in the vicinity of Detroit, of course, is GM Authority Editor-in-Chief Manoli Katakis. Hey, Manoli, how's it going?
Hey, guys. I just want to point it out there, the observation that the snow was kidnapped last night, and it's gone missing.
Who took it?
I have no idea, but there's a warrant out for the arrest of the kid of the snow napper.
My question is, what's the reward for the snow?
More snow.
More snow. So if you return to snow, you're going to get even more snow, which will mean that it will take you about 14 days to get out of a parking spot that you're going to be buried in for the rest of the rest of the week.
It's Michigan.
Well, you know, down here in, I shouldn't say down here, but over here in Colorado Springs, we get
out west, yeah, and up high.
I already said this, but we don't get that much snow, so doesn't really work. How about
you're a mile up from sea level, and you said down here,
right? Exactly. That's by the way, that is Hilton Jorson, GM Authority Opinion Desk writer, and you know, the opinionator, I think, is your official title.
Yeah, that's me.
Okay.
Got a problem with that?
Nope. I think we coined that last week.
Yes,
the three of us.
You know what? I think many Detroit Red Wing fans want to know is how are we going to do these shows with somebody from, you know, Colorado?
Yeah.
Well, they don't like the fact that I'm in Colorado.
Well,
I don't think so.
They don't like the Avs.
Well, we don't trust you is the thing.
Oh, okay. So I'm just sabotaging the deal. Is that the case?
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Well, hey, you never know.
No, I mean, a year ago when they were listening to the show, they said, you know, this is a great show. And so, you know, some guy down in Florida that's, you know, running the show, and well, that's all cool and everything. And now, you know, you introduce yourself as being in Colorado, and it's like,
yeah,
they're going like,
Avs fan. Ugh.
Well, so nobody cares. Nobody cares about the Panthers. I'm still a Panthers fan. That's still my number one team, by the way.
And let it be. Let it be.
Okay.
You know what? Shut up, guys. They're going to win eventually.
Well, hey, Hilton, aren't you a Senators fan?
Yeah, I am.
I think there's something to be said about that.
Well, just you wait. Just wait.
All right. That's what I've been saying about the Panthers. I mean,
I don't have to wait.
That's true.
Red Wings.
Listen, here's my theory. If you give a team enough time to win, eventually they will win because the law of averages just works in their favor more and more.
I have
not if you're a Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, I also have another countermeasure. Yeah. The Detroit Lions. Maybe you've heard of them. A team. Yeah.
Well, the problem there is that Illich doesn't own them.
Yeah, that's a huge problem. The Fords do, and we all know about the Fords.
Well, speaking of the Fords, Chevy announced something just yesterday that's going to somewhat catch GM up.
Catch up or surpass?
Barely catch up, but not catch up completely.
You still think the Sync program is better?
Yeah, absolutely, I do. This is the Chevrolet MyLink that's going to make its debut in 2012 model year vehicles. It's going to start off with the Volt and the Equinox, which, by the way, this pisses me off up to no end.
Because I'm pissed about it, too.
I just bought a 2011 Cruze. Okay.
Why isn't it in the Cruze?
I don't know. It should have been in there. I guess they just ran out of time. And the problem is that it's not like you can do a software update. This thing needs a color touchscreen display. So it's not like I can go back and say, hey, guys, wink, wink, can you get me some, hook me up here? It's not going to happen.
Maybe a 2012 Cruise will feature a touchscreen display. A color touchscreen display.
The current nav-equipped Cruise does have color, but it isn't touchscreen. So maybe it will, and I'm thinking that's the case. There's no reason why, this is 2011, why any vehicle should either not have a touchscreen display or an interface like the Lexuses have with the mouse-like device down there between the seats.
Doesn't Ford offer sync in nearly every vehicle?
It does. It's got the way it happens in Fords is you could either have the touchscreen, which is the full sync experience, or you get the kind of the toned down experience that you get the display behind the steering wheel, between the speedometer and the tach. And it does everything via voice. It's got all those features, but it doesn't have a touchscreen, basically, and doesn't have all the pretty good-looking functionality. But this Chevy MyLink, what it is it's basically a significant update to Chevy's infotainment systems that allows drivers or, of course, cabin occupants, passengers, to access a variety of apps through a Bluetooth-connected device, such as an Android or a BlackBerry. This works with Apple devices as well, but those currently need to be hooked up through a USB cable. I'm told that Ford – this is a problem not only with the Chevy system, with the MyLink system, but with the Ford – MyFord Touch and MyLink and Touch systems as well, and the new Toyota – whatever they're just called.
The Entune?
Yeah, the Entune system. Basically, they're working – all these companies are working with Apple to figure out how they're going to enable this to be a wireless experience so that you don't
Who makes all these programs? Is it Microsoft? I know Sync is Microsoft.
Sorry,
for
Sync
sure.
Sync isn't really Microsoft. It's based Sync on Microsoft's automotive platform. But – Ford did a significant amount of customization and tuning. Now, if you look at Kia, their Uvo program, that one is also based on Microsoft's automotive platform, but that one uses that's basically Kia's own implementation of it, kind of like Ford has, Sync, and that's its own implementation. But as far as I know, MyLink, as well as the Toyota system, those are two proprietary systems that aren't based on anything else. I'm guessing there's supplier involved here, someone like maybe Pioneer that obviously Chevy works pretty closely with in their audio system systems. But I don't know who the supplier is, if it is a supplier. Maybe just a completely grounds up, effort. But what this allows you to do is, one, it allows you to stream or to control apps that are on your phone, on your smartphone, using your voice and car functionality and car basically the voice features of your car. So let's say you have Twitter running on your phone. You can say press the voice recognition button and say voice, and then it's going to say okay, I'm ready, and then it's going to say something like you can say something like new tweet, and then you can basically dictate a tweet to the system and it will bring up this, it will type it out as best as it can and transcode it. That's the kind of app integration that they're talking about. The other part of this app integration that they also announced is the ability to have apps running in the vehicle itself. So now your phone isn't no longer involved. Now you have Pandora, for example, or Stitcher directly on your display, on the touchscreen display. You can touch you can select Pandora, the app on your Equinox or Volt or whatever Chevy you have, and it will play Pandora radio and stream it through the wireless functionality. So that's kind of the app experience. They also have Bluetooth voice or Bluetooth audio streaming, which is for the geeks out there, it's called A2DP. And it's basically a stack that adds to the Bluetooth stack right now that, you know, you have, you can talk and have a conversation with someone via your Bluetooth system. Now it adds the functionality to stream wirelessly your songs, podcasts, whatever content you have on your devices to the speaker system. And then the last part of this, the MyLink system, is the ability to inductively charge your devices, your iPhone or Android or BlackBerry devices, inductively. So you don't have to connect it to a USB cable. You can just lay it down. This is powered by PowerMat. So you can just lay it down in a place somewhere on the dash or around the cup holder area, and it will charge it without you having to plug anything in.
Leap in charging.
Right.
So now we have now we know why we have those cubby holes in the cruise in front of the shifter. Just put your charging mat
right,
there.
Right, right. I don't know if they're gonna, that's where they're gonna put it, but maybe they will put it there. I don't really like that space in the cruise in front of the shifter, because if you have a phone that's long enough, it doesn't, like, for example, my iPhone 3GS, it doesn't, if you put it in there, it won't touch the shifter when it's in park. But if you leave it there and it shifts while you're driving, and then you go in and put it in park, and most people, you know, like I do, I think they kind of slide that shifter, you know, quite quickly in the park position, you can actually smash your phone, you know, because you can kind of, you know, it doesn't have anywhere to go. So I don't, I use that stuff. If I do use the cubby hole there, I just put kind of change in there and business cards and stuff like that.
But, so I have a question with respect to Pandora. Let's assume that we have that on our smartphone.
Okay.
We're hooked up to here. What does that mean for XM now? Because all of a sudden you've opened up a
Pandora's
new
box.
Way for people.
Nice. You know, that's a great question. I think that basically what's going to happen is the playing field is getting level, you know. And this brings up another question. You know, obviously I have XM on my cruise right now. Whenever I go into a tunnel or whenever I even drive around the downtown, I get absolutely no satellite radio reception whatsoever.
Well, do you think that you're going to get Pandora if it's streaming through your phone through Bluetooth?
Absolutely.
Under a tunnel, under a mountain?
Well, maybe not under a mountain, but in downtown, definitely. You know, even, you know, if I go in my garage and I park in the garage, I'll be able to hear it there as well. So that's the difference. And I think the playing field is now getting to a point where XM no longer needs to deploy all these expensive, you know, this expensive infrastructure. There's no reason why you no longer can just stream XM over the web to your vehicle or to your phone or, you know, et cetera. It doesn't need to be satellite radio anymore. It just needs to be paid, you know, commercial-free radio.
Yeah, I definitely think XM needs to switch up the way they deliver their music. Yeah. Otherwise, they're going to go out of business.
Well, they already have some of that infrastructure.
They do.
Now, because when like you said, you have an account with XM, so you can actually log in to the internet and listen. You through your XM account
for $3.99 a month.
Well, no, it's included though.
But they wanted to charge me $2.99 a month, I think, for that.
Well, last it was included when I got it.
Oh, maybe your grandfather.
But, you know, when you talk to XM, you know they're going to ask you to renew. That was part of the deal when you bought the car, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, they're going to ask you to renew. Say no. They'll call you again. Say no. Third time, negotiate.
Ah. That's the trick, huh?
And you get it. Yeah.
Nice.
Now, and there's also... Go ahead, Hilton.
Well, I know guys, they're paying... You know, some guys are paying $2.99 a month for a six-month contract, and that includes home access.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pennies.
Exactly. $2.99, that's nothing.
Well, here's the thing.
That's a Red Bull at the gas station.
Here's the thing, though. I listen to 20 on 20 quite a bit on XM.
Ugh, come on.
Come on.
You pansy.
It's all the mainstream stuff.
Exactly.
That's the only channel I know, you know.
You have no taste.
I have no taste.
Clearly.
Clearly. I'm just going to mimic everything you say.
But that's the other thing, too, is, like, at least with, like, XM's, like, radio station offerings compared to, like, Pandora, how you can, you know, you type in an artist's name and it'll play, you know, that artist and artists like it. There's definitely, like, a different offering between the two. So it's not so much that one's going to eat up the other. It's, I think that they can actually complement each other much nicely. Or much, that's terrible English.
Well, I think, yeah.
Very nicely.
Good job, Mr. Editor-in-Chief. So I agree with you, and I think that the way that this stuff will work in the future is everything will come down over the web. You know, whether it's it doesn't matter what it's called, it doesn't matter what it was before, but it's going to get delivered to you over the internet. Period. Nonetheless, like I was, you know, explaining and trying to explain before, I was so rudely interrupted by the comment that I have no taste. You know, just because I'm trying to fit in and listen to what all the cool kids are listening to, you know, on the 20 on 20 channel. I probably hear the same song played 3 to 4 times throughout the day.
When I used to lifeguard at Oakland University, we had this one ridiculous FM radio station, and I think any local Detroiters listening to this podcast know about the radio station 98.7, know what I'm talking about, but is this stupid pop radio station that all that you listen to is like a 10 song playlist. And when you're sitting on the guard stand or whatever, for, you know, walking down and up and around the pool, and you got the music going off, and it's, you know, you're there for like 6 hours at a time. Seriously, like you want to go insane because it's just the same stupid music. I can't stand it.
Well, you don't like Britney Spears, Manoli?
Sorry, man, I can't.
I thought she was your favorite.
Singer. I will admit, when I was 9, I had a crush on her. You know, but you can't hold that against me.
You don't have a crush on her anymore?
I can't say I do. Sorry. Once you shave your head and pop a kid out, you kind of lose your attraction to me. I'm sorry.
Manoli, you have no taste.
I know. I know. You can't.
So, this is obviously something that we've been talking about for quite a while, and I think that this is going to be the basis of, you know, because that's what they needed. That's what GM lacked so much before Mylan came along. They did not have a smart infotainment system. They had little pieces here and there. Like, they had OnStar, which, by the way, don't confuse OnStar MyLink with Chevrolet MyLink. Two completely different, separate, you know, pieces of software.
Do you think that they maybe should have called Chevy MyLink a different
name? They should have called it something else. They should have called it, you know, this MyLink thing. I understand where they're going. And maybe there's another shoe that's about to drop that they're going to drop sometime in the future about.
Well, and they couldn't call it My Chevrolet because that name has already been used up too.
For the app, right.
Yeah, for a cell phone app.
I think they should have called it something fun, like, you know, Sync, okay, but Entune is more like it for me. I like Kia's Uvo branding. I like that. That's fine. But
what's Hyundai got? Or is that like more of an OnStar thing?
Hyundai, they haven't debuted theirs yet. And I don't know what they're going to call it. I think they announced a name. It's going to be Blue something, like, not Bluetooth, but I think it's, as far as I know, it's Blue and it's got another word or two attached to it. But yeah, I agree with you. The branding is a little bit strange, especially with the OnStar MyLink app. Maybe they're trying to just do this kind of, you have the MyLink in your vehicle and you have the MyLink on OnStar, so everything is linked together. Maybe that's the thought pattern there, but
yeah.
It doesn't really make much sense to me. But this is what they really needed. They needed a platform on which further pieces of integration, you know, with the infotainment systems could be developed. You know, now that they have this in place, now that they have the operating system in place that powers this stuff, they can write improvements to it. They can write different apps to it. They can open up and create an API, which for those of you who I may be getting too geeky, you know, with an API is a – It's an application.
I'm tuned out.
Application programming interface basically allows you to create, to build on top of a system and create software. So, for example, like you got your iPhone, the way that a developer would make an app for your iPhone is through that API. Same thing for Android, same thing for BlackBerry, Windows phones, etc. But basically now your vehicle can have an API that developers can write to the vehicle and create a program for deployment in the vehicle, which is it's pretty revolutionary. You know, I don't know if we were thinking about this 10 years ago, but 10 years ago, I definitely didn't think that we would have programs that we could install ourselves in our cars. You know, that's a pretty major leap going forward.
I got a question. Why isn't this on Cadillac and, you know, everything else?
Well, I don't know. I think that it's interesting because Ford did the same thing. They introduced Sync on Fords first, then they kind of made Sync available to Lincolns, and then they rebranded everything to My Ford Touch, My Lincoln Touch, etc.
Like, I understand because, I mean, obviously Chevrolet is the biggest seller for, you know, GM, but in terms of, like, technology offerings, things like that, I mean, Cadillac needs as much kind of, like, one-ups as they can get.
Right. Well, so does Chevy. I mean, against Ford.
Why just Chevy? Like, is...
Well, I think it's something that they're going to, you know, they wanted to announce it, and what they could have done is they could have waited 4 months to roll this thing out across Buick, GMC, and Cadillac, as well as Chevrolet, or they could have just announced it for Chevy now, and then maybe next month announce it for Cadillac, the month after that announce it for Buick, and then a month after that announce it for GMC. I think this stuff is, you know, within the next 3 to 4 months, maybe 5 months tops, this is going to be available across the entire GM range, you know. Across the entire 2012 GM range.
Yeah, hopefully.
You know, I think that...
Well, at least anything that offers a color touchscreen.
Right. Well, and as far as I understand it, these are going to be options. So this is not going to be, you know, a standard feature. You're going to have to be able to buy this. And I want to know, if you don't opt for the Chevy MyLink, what are you going to get? Are you still going to get a detuned version of it without the touchscreen, without the color interface? Or are you going to get something else? Because, you know, keep in mind that... Every GM vehicle has that color driver info center behind the wheel. So they could easily do something like that, like, you know, maybe it's not going to be touch screen, but something similar with that display.
Not all of them are color.
Not all of them are color?
No.
Actually, that's right. Mine isn't color, right? I meant to say digital, like LCD.
Okay.
Instead of color, that's right. But one complaint that I actually have about this, and I've put in a question to GM... I have not heard back yet. They just announced it yesterday, so you know, they may not. They may be getting around to replying to all the questions that they have in the order that they were received, which is something that I hear all too often. But you know, there's no, as far as I know, there's no contact sync. So what you can't do, and this is the other feature that we didn't discuss, is you can press that voice control button and you can say iPod or, you know, iPhone or Android or, you know, Droid or whatever you have. And you can say play artist, you know, U2, play artist the Beatles. And it will play, you know, that artist. You can also say play podcast, GM Authority, and it will play that podcast. But it's lacking the functionality to do the same with a phone book. And that's something that... the Kia Uvo systems have today, and I'm not sure about the Sync systems. I don't think they do, but and that's called basically contact sync. So anytime you start the car, your phone books contacts, if your phone is paired and hooked up and all that, it's going to automatically synchronize with the phone book on the car, and then it's going to say, you know, all right, these are all the phone numbers I got, these are the changes I got throughout the day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right now, this is not an option, or at least it wasn't the press release or the introductory videos that were announced here just yesterday. So hopefully that's something – and again, this is something that they can build on and upgrade over time. I just hope that they make those updates and software improvements available to buyers of those first vehicles, you know, the first batch of vehicles equipped with Chevy MyLink. So, and, you know, 2012, like I said, I'm a little bit peeved about that. I was hoping they would make this available across the entire, you know, the 2011 line. The Cruise, just, you know, for crying out loud, it just freaking came out, and already it's outdated. You know, so basically I just bought an outdated car.
Yeah, when you look at the Elantra.
Right. Well, not even that, but with this announcement, I have an outdated car. Think about it. Like, I just bought it 3.5 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, and the Cruise, I mean, that's definitely a new like
exactly. It's
Chevy's baby.
It should have
next
been,
to the Volt.
Right, it should have been debuted. It should have debuted on the Cruze and the Volt, and if they really wanted to, the Equinox. Not the Volt and the Equinox. The Cruze should have been first. And no, I'm not just saying that because I just bought one and you know all that, but.
The Cruze is going to be a breadwinner more right. than
no, but if it's a launch vehicle, why not freaking build it in? You know why not? That's the part that kind of pisses me off. I wouldn't be so pissed off if I
grind your gears
if my play and pause button worked in the middle of the console there. But even that doesn't work. So all right, I'm going to get off the soapbox. Let's talk about the next generation GMC Acadia. So. This is kind of interesting. There have been a few reports from sites that are going to rename nameless for now, saying that the Acadia is going to go away and that there is going to be no next generation Acadia from GMC. So then there was a report from Cheers and Gears who said, well, actually, hold on, guys. Our sources say that there will be a next gen Acadia. It's just going to be a lot different. And they're going to basically, instead of leaving the Acadia on the Lambda platform, they're going to move it over to the Theta Premium platform that, of course, is shared with the SRX and the impending Saab 94X, which has been impending for the last 2.5 years.
I saw one at the Chicago Auto Show.
How did you like it?
I actually couldn't sit in it. It was taken at the time I walked by the Saab exhibit.
They took it. Those bastards.
It looked good, though.
It's an SRX. It's, you know, there's no denying it. It's the same exact wheelbase, same exact track, same exact car with a different shell. You know, that's what that is. So apparently the reason for this change is, you know, GM was looking at the numbers and apparently they realized, you know, this is kind of a hallelujah moment for them. I don't know how they didn't realize this in the beginning, but they realized that the Buick Enclave and the Acadia were being cross-shopped very frequently, especially in, you know, since they're usually sold side-by-side in Buick GMC dealerships. So, you know, and the original plan, I think, was that the Acadia would be the body, kind of the body sibling to the Saturn Outlook, whereas the Traverse, the Chevy Traverse and the Buick Enclave would be the body mates there. So
yeah, because they're a little longer than the Acadia.
They're a little longer, right, exactly, yeah. Right. So, you know, since the Outlook is no more, this makes the Acadia the most expensive Lambda-based vehicle to produce, which led, you know, GM's product planning teams to downsize the next-generation Acadia. And,
more like, you know, the bean counters.
Right. Well, here's my question, though. See, I think that, and again, this is going back to my Cadillac Buick rhetoric, which we will not discuss and bring up on this show.
Thank God.
Because I think we've you know, torn that one to shreds already. But here's the thing. Why have two of the same exact vehicle? They're styled a little bit differently.
Oh, very differently.
But they're the same car. Three rows, similar price tags, same engines. Why have it side by side in the same showroom?
Yeah. No, why have it? But here's the thing. Isn't Buick expecting – aren't we expecting a smaller crossover from Buick
right.
somewhere
yes.
know, down the road soon?
The Encore. So,
the Encore, whatever. And was it going to be you know, some say it might not even be a Theta.
I think
some say it'll be a Delta II or a Gamma.
Right. I think they're saying that it's going to be a Gamma, but no one knows for sure. That's the consensus.
Honestly, if it's any smaller than – if it's not on a Theta, I think it's a mistake.
Yeah, I see eye to eye with you there.
Yeah, and
if the
go ahead, Hilton.
No, I'm just wondering with respect to Acadia, if they move to the Theta, are they still going to have the third row?
Well, that's the thing. If they move to the Theta, guess what? The terrain is on the Theta, and that's going to make them almost the same size. So what they'll have to do there is they'll have to take the terrain. Which, by the way, with the Equinox, the terrain is on the larger version of the Theta platform. And what they could do is they're probably going to move the terrain to be smaller, a smaller Theta, or maybe even a Gamma. I don't know. But it's obviously going to have to become smaller now that the Acadia supposedly – none of this is confirmed, of course – but now that the Acadia is going to shrink the terrain is going to have to shrink. And I don't know if it's going to have a third row. I don't know if you know. As I said before, I think they're that Chevy's making a mistake by not including a third row in the terrain, or at least not making it available in the terrain and the Equinox, because there's room there. They could do it if they really wanted to and put their minds to it. Kia did it with the Sorento. You know, Toyota's been doing it with the Highlander, as well as the RAV4, and the Highlander's, you know, 2 inches longer than the
I want to see how many third row Sorentos are actually selling.
Well, quite a bit, at least in this region that I am here. I think about 67% of the Sorentos sold here have the third row. So
yeah, but are they? But how are they selling in comparison to the numbers of the Ford Edge and Chevy Equinox, which are cars of the same size?
Well, see, that's the thing. But, I don't know if it's really. I don't know if you can put the question that way, because here's the deal. I can go out. The Sorento is basically cost about the same as the Equinox. You know, $200-$300 less. So what I can do is I can get myself, if I had a family that required three rows, I can get myself into a three-row vehicle by buying the Sorento, and I will only pay, you know, 22, 23, 24 grand. So I could do that. Or if I really wanted a Chevy, the only Chevy I can buy is the Traverse, and that already starts at 30 grand, you know, and that's base. So I don't know if you can look at it that way. I think it's just a matter of being extremely uncompetitive with another Kia's offerings. And I understand that there's not a problem right now with the Equinox and the terrain. They're both selling extremely well, and you know they're hot. Like, you know, it seems like they're the next best thing since sliced bread. But you know, I think it's just, you know, GM in general, their compact / midsize crossovers are, you know, competitively challenged when it comes to third row seating.
Yeah, but I mean, I know you've exhausted the topic, but I don't really think that's a disability on their part, especially, you know, considering their market data showing that, you know, previous generations of the Equinox,
right, but
offering third row seats just didn't sell. So
sure, but that's the previous gen, and that's, you know, that may or may not have been implemented in a very, you know, good way, so to speak. So I don't know if we can go by previous generation vehicles. You know, the previous gen Equinox was a crappy vehicle. I don't think we can even begin to.
I wanted one. Okay.
I think it looked great from the outside, but it just drove like, you know, molasses, and combined with some some cheap molasses combined with a snow sled. That's what it drove like.
What is the cheapest 7-passenger vehicle General Motors sells?
That's the in the United States or in Canada, it depends on where you're looking at.
Doesn't matter.
Well, in the United States, it's a Traverse, obviously, and in Canada, you're going to have the Orlando.
Well, yeah, but it's not available yet.
Right.
But compare that with, for example, you know, Chrysler, where you can get a minivan for like $17,000.
Or maybe even
that's cheap.
Or how about the Dodge Journey? How much does that start? I think that's like 23.
The Journey's big, isn't it?
No, it's 190 inches. It's the same. It's two inches longer than the Equinox.
Well, the Equinox is big.
It's big. Size crossover, right. Well, it's not big for a midsize. I don't think it's big for a midsize. It's big for a compact, which is what initially GM marketed it as a compact crossover.
Yeah, Traverse is listed as a midsize.
Right. That's a, you know.
Well, in some press releases anyway.
Right. Right. And, well, it's funny. That's the game they play. They say, well, you know, compared to the RAV4, you know, the Equinox is a compact crossover, but compared to the Highlander, the Equinox is a midsize crossover. So, you know, it all depends on how you look at it and which way you cut the bread. But
well, it just seems like in the bottom line is that in the United States, General Motors, you know, they've got plenty of vehicles that cater to large wealthy families, but they have nothing that caters to large poor families.
Right, exactly. Here's the thing.
How much can you get an express van for?
With seats.
Milk carton.
Well, I'll tell you guys.
Yes. No, not milk carton seats. Bench seats. Two rows of bench seats.
Manoli, come on. You're not going to be driving around a stupid express van with a V8, you know, and getting 3 miles a gallon, you know.
Yeah, baby.
And you're gonna look really cool too, by the way, when you pull up. Here's something interesting. The journey starts at $20,845 with destination. So, guess what? That's $2,000 less than the Equinox, and it's available with the third row. So it's definitely, you know, GM is competitively disadvantaged in that segment, and their vehicles may be selling like hotcakes right now, but I want to know what's going to happen in 2 or 3 years, you know, when, you know, the Equinox and the Terrain are going to have, you know, 2 or 3 more years left on their life cycle. How are they going to sell then? Because that's when it really counts. Every car sells well upon its launch unless
it's... they're going to be due for a mid-cycle refresh soon.
Okay. Well, we'll see. But here's the thing. All they need to do is bring the Captiva over or make the Equinox, which already is the same exact vehicle as the Captiva, you know, add the third row and then reconfigure that second, third row situation there. And they got it down. And then they need to make a smaller CUV, something that competes with the Kia, the Sportage and the Hyundai Tucson.
Well, yeah,
and the...
I mean, that's the point I wanted to bring up, too, is, you know, because GM already has two different size vehicles riding on the Theta platform. You know, you got the Captiva and the Equinox and cars like the Terrain, you know, as well. But then you got crossovers like, you know, the Late View and the Opel Antera, you know, smaller ones.
Right.
That, so... You know, considering that, we could see maybe the next Terrain being more like Antera size, and you know the next Acadia being what the current Terrain is, and you know you're not necessarily going to be cross shop, you know you're not necessarily going to cross shop the two that much, even though they're going to ride on the same platform.
Right.
But you know, you also got to think too is the reason that the GMC is getting cut right now is because there's only like one, it's the only one of its like proportions being built this way. So you got to think that, you know, if GM is thinking like this, they're not going to build just the Acadia like to this certain size, or just the excuse me, I got to sneeze.
God,
No.
Well, you see, it's funny because both caught the
bug.
Yeah,
but it's funny when you say it. Yeah, but it's funny when you say it, like, you don't have to do it anymore.
I think you figured out the trick.
Yes. Anyway, where was I going with this?
You may have lost your train of thought.
No. I got it. Okay. So if GM is going by the game of, you know, we can't just build one model, like, one size, you know, so we got to have another car in another brand, you know, being built alongside it. So we're probably going to see some kind of, you know, crossover play calling like this from Chevy as well, where we have maybe two crossovers on the Theta and one big Lambda.
Well, that's
which
what
I think
is
a good move.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. And
globalize the Captiva, maybe put the Equinox, you know, bring it to more Antera size.
You know,
like the old view.
The more I look at the Captiva, the new Captiva, the refreshed one for 2011. Mm-hmm. The more I fall in love with that vehicle.
I like it mucho more.
Everything about it is perfect. I'm just downloading all these pictures now from GM Europe, you know, to make the galleries for our readers. This thing...
Oh, that's why you're downloading photos.
Oh, my God. It looks great in the snow. They have pictures of it doing some, you know, some cool snow stuff, you know, riding around in there. It's just hot.
Just going to print out posters and put them on your ceiling.
Oh, so I could just lie in bed and
yeah.
You know, we're not gonna go there. But
are they gonna sell? Is the Captiva gonna sell as a Chevrolet in Europe?
It is Chevrolet
Captiva.
Okay. Yep. And then they also have in certain markets. Basically, the interesting part about the Captiva is that it's a three-row vehicle. It you can get a third row in it. And I was looking at pictures of that third row, and
that's because they don't have anything bigger in Europe or anywhere else. They don't have a full-size cross.
Sure.
They don't have a Lambda.
Right. Exactly.
So Captiva's all they got. It's as big as you get.
Well, it's the same thing with the Explorer, for example. The Edge isn't sold in Europe right now because that's, you know, they don't have that platform set up. That CD3 platform that Ford uses for the Edge isn't available in Europe. But when the next generation Edge comes out, that's going to share its platform with the Mondeo and, you know, whatever the Fusion is going to be, it's going to ride in the same exact architecture. Then they're going to have you know, that over there. But the Explorer, for example, the new Explorer isn't available in Europe. It's just too big. So, you know, all when all is said and done, I think that GM kind of needs to restructure their CUV lineup to be more in line with their car lineup. They need to have a compact CUV, a midsize, and a full size, you know, crossover range. And then whatever else they got with the
they just need to rip a page out of Ford's book and global and about how they're globalizing everything.
Well, they're doing it. They're doing it slowly, but it's just
they need to do it tomorrow. Like they do. Like five minutes ago, they should have done it.
I know. Well, I think the bankruptcy and all that kind of stifled a lot of their plans.
Yeah, it definitely set them back. But I'm curious to know how complicated would it be to have a very, you know, sophisticated global launch of one vehicle. Like, yeah, the Cruze is obviously launching globally, but yeah, it's been launching globally for the past 3 years now.
Well, let me tell you something. If you do it right, and exactly that last point right there is the key, in my opinion.
Mm. You got to be quick about
it. You have to implement the same vehicle globally at the same exact time. You have to be, you know, you have to set the stuff up. This is a major. It's a colossal engineering, logistics, marketing effort that needs to happen in order to launch a vehicle globally at the same time. But here's the thing. Ford is doing that right now with the Focus, right? And guess what? The benefits that it has are enormous, because think about it. If you launch a vehicle, you're going to put some advertisements out there, right? You're going to get some marketing materials out. People are going to start talking about this car. When people start talking about this car, they're going to talk about it all at once if you launch the car at the same time globally. So guess what? You're going to be on Facebook. You're going to be on Twitter. Whatever other social network you're on, you're going to hear about the Focus. You're going to hear about that one car because that's what everyone's talking about.
Global buzz.
Global buzz, exactly.
Global buzz.
I think we have the
title billions.
Of the show.
Billions. Germans do that.
Yeah, not just millions of people. Billions.
Gazillions.
Billions of people talking about it at the same time.
I think we have
the
title of the show.
The Germans seem to be good at doing that.
Right. They are. They are. That's the only thing they focus on. You know.
The Germans.
I think that's what GM is slowly getting to, but you know, the bankruptcy set them back. While they were doing that thing, you know, busy preoccupied with all that, you know, hoopla that goes
with
the
being broken stuff,
right?
Yeah,
you know, Ford was borrowing heavily, you know, against its brand and all that, and you know, they borrowed and borrowed and borrowed, and they got the cash reserves they needed, and they invested it heavily, aggressively, in product development, marketing.
Well, they're still not out of the woods yet, even though they have momentum. They're not.
Well, look, they paid down 47% of their debt in 2010. I mean, how much more do you need?
43%.
Right. No, I understand that, but if they did
53%, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm really good at math, guys.
If they did it in – that's why you're not an engineer.
Yeah, that's why I stick to writing. I know words.
What are words anyway? We'll see. Well, I think that this is, you know, there's a market opportunity that they're missing with a third row midsize CUV like the Equinox. And they're also missing a market opportunity with a compact CUV like the Sportage or like the Hyundai Tucson. And I think there's or the next generation Ford Escape, you know, that's going to share its platform with the Ford Kuga, the C platform with the Focus and the Ford Kuga right now. So,
what was the reason for not bringing the Orlando to the United States?
I have no idea. But as
the
far
knot
as,
hole.
Yeah. You know, it might have been the knot hole because they thought that, you know, the American consumer is a lot more the American driver. Just they can't stand these things. You know, they can't do it. They can't deal with these cars.
The segment for an MPV is not that big to begin with.
But it's not big now, but it's going to grow. And the guys at Autoblog talked about this as well.
Yeah, I know. But the Orlando, like, look, it's – and it wasn't even a serious MPV. Like when you look at the Mazda 5, which is – that is an MPV. I mean, for crying out loud, the last generation, what was called the MPV, they invented the segment. It had, you know, rear – you know, things like that that kind of – make it more like a small minivan more than just like a fat hatchback.
I like it when you talk
about
it.
Which basically with the Orlando was just, I mean, it was just like a fat station wagon. Not even, it was just a station wagon.
Well, it was a very, very spacious station wagon. With a third row. which is what they need.
What makes you think it's so spacious?
Well, look at the specs. It's got tons amount of leg room, tons amount of shoulder room.
I want to see the headroom.
I'd say it would probably be similar to the Equinox.
I have yet to sit in one. Too bad we're not going to Geneva, guys.
Yeah, well, but we will be in New York, so you know, maybe they'll bring it over and just show it, but they probably won't.
Sure. You can't have this, ha ha ha.
Just put
I'll bring one over to Detroit, and we'll do a segment on it.
They won't. Oh, that'd be awesome.
They won't let you into the country.
Oh yeah,
sir, right. You can't drive this vehicle into the country. It's not sold here. Sir, we're gonna have to ask you to turn around. Well,
I wonder if south of the border, or like you know, like around the border area by Mexico, if people see a lot of Chevy Matiz and Sparks, or not Sparks yet, but the Matiz.
That means corn, yeah. By the way, in Spanish.
I know what it means, but you guys know what you guys seen that car, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
What a piece of.
I know it's a it's junk.
It's a great Daewoo. Great Daewoo. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Cadillac Shield program. We'll also talk about Bob Lutz and whatever may be happening there. And
is he coming to the show?
Nope. But he may be. Which you know that's we're in negotiations.
That's awesome.
But before we talk about that, I would like to remind everyone that we do have a phone number that you can call us if you have something to add, comment. Maybe you want to take us up on our opinion of whatever. Give us a call, 313-355-3GMA. That's 313-355-3462.
Ladies, don't be scared that we have a 313 number. All right?
Don't be scared. We're classy.
Call us.
We're classy.
Yeah.
Like that. Let's talk about the Shield program, the Caddy Shield program. What's this all about? I think you wrote this one up.
I did.
So what's it about?
It's going to make Cadillac owners feel real special.
Ooh. Yeah.
Well, that's the goal.
Will it have a – never mind. I was going to ask something inappropriate. Let's keep going.
Well.
So I think what? It's got the 24-hour roadside assistance.
Yeah, you get 24-hour roadside assistance. You get bumper-to-bumper coverage, like should your car get in any sort of accident or even totaled. And that's good for 55,000 miles or 5 years, I believe.
I think it's 50,000.
50,000 miles in 5 years. Sorry, my page is loading.
50,000-mile bumper-to-bumper warranty, courtesy transportation during service visits for warranty issues. So don't go getting mad at your car because you can't claim that your steering wheel broke because of warranty issues when you slammed a fist into it. Caddy will also offer owners the benefits, obviously, of OnStar, My Cadillac smartphone application, and, of course, they'll be able to do all the good stuff, like request a service appointment, maintenance appointment, request roadside assistance from that application, so on and so forth. So this is different. Let me just understand this. This is different from that program that they offered about 6 or 7 months ago where they are trying to match what BMW is doing by replacing, your certain parts of the car. This is different from that, right?
I suppose so.
It's not the same. So, all right. Well, I guess it's something they can market. It's got a cool name.
It's got a great name, I think, the Cadillac Shield.
I mean, Cadillac does have sort of a shield if you strip away that
wreath. Yeah, it is a shield, not a the wreath and crest. I mean, that's a crest,
but it can also be a shield,
like a coat of arms. Right. But yeah, it's totally a shield.
You can see a go ahead, Tim.
What does this program offer above and beyond what Cadillac's competition offers?
Nothing.
Well, you got a best in the business 5-year 100,000 mile powertrain warranty. That's, yeah. I mean,
my Hyundai offers that.
Yeah, but that's a Hyundai. You know, you don't really see luxury brands offering this kind of warranty for 100,000 miles. I don't think another luxury brand does that. So you got that going for you at least, and that you also have OnStar, and the My Cadillac smartphone app. You know, those are all original things to unique things to Cadillac.
But they all existed. I guess what they're doing here is just bundling it up.
Yeah, they're all this is the program.
Okay.
The very sweet sounding program.
So are you gonna have the Chevy bowtie shield?
The bowtie program?
I don't know. I think it's a good thing that they
should do this for Buick as well.
They should, because luxury brands, that's what people care about there, you know?
The Tri-Shield.
Ooh.
Oh, snap.
That's it. Cadillac is out.
Yeah, Cadillac just got wound up.
I think that what they call it is it just got bitch slapped.
They got pwned.
Oops. I'm wondering, what kind of a warranty does Lexus have on its powertrain?
You tell me, Mr. Lexus enthusiast.
Well, see, I had one, but I never really cared about it because I always return a car, you know. It was a lease, so I returned it way before it came time for me to look at it. Here it is, warranty and security. Let's take a look here. This makes for great radio.
20,000 miles, wheel alignment and balance. Oh, wait.
No, that's different.
Yeah, 48 months or 50,000 miles. So, yeah, that's half.
No, that's 48 and 50 for the actual vehicle. That's bumper to bumper.
That's basic warranty coverage.
One second.
The bumper to bumper coverage for the Cadillac is that amount, but you get 100,000 miles for basic warranty issues. That's awesome.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So
that's the difference.
So if my ashtray breaks, for example.
Yeah.
What if my leather starts to crack? What is that? Does that count as?
I would imagine that'd be under warranty. I don't see. I mean, yes, some kind of issue like that. That's a warranty thing. But it's like, but if you neglect to maybe change your oil, or say you filled your Cadillac SRX with turbo with unleaded, rather.
I still think that's GM's fault.
No, how is that GM's fault that you're? Look, I drove an SRX turbo for a week, okay, and I was not that stupid to neglect the little sign on the gas cap that says premium frickin' fuel only. Do not fill me with regular unleaded.
But why is it that the SRX requires that kind of fuel and no other turbo vehicle in the market requires it?
Lots of turbocharged models.
Like what?
Like
BMW,
what?
Like the BMW 3 or 5 series with the turbo engines don't require that. The X3 doesn't require that, obviously. The X5 doesn't require that unless you're getting the M package. What car requires it? Nothing else does, except unless it's a Saab, and Saab requires that.
Nissans require premium fuel. The Lexus requires premium fuel, and that's not even turbocharged.
You don't have to. It doesn't require. It's suggested. Nothing's going to go wrong if you fill it up with regular.
Oh, so this is the problem here is because they suggest that you fill it up with premium.
Well, no, the problem is that something goes wrong when you don't when you don't fill it up with premium.
Well, that's usually the case when you do that too.
Well, that's the problem. The problem is that it's required. And
that's not a problem. That's the way the engine works.
Okay, well that's competitive.
Again, and that's
Manoli,
like a ZR1. If you're going to fill up a ZR1 with regular,
but we're not talking about a ZR1. We're talking about a mommy mobile. Okay.
No, but it's the principle of things. And so what if it's a mommobile? Moms need to be educated on the subject of filling up their gas tanks too.
Okay, hold on a second. Doing what they did, and obviously it's not the issue anymore. We're just talking here for just shooting, shooting arguments back and forth. But the reason it's a problem is because it puts Cadillac at a competitive disadvantage. When you require this fuel, you know, usually the way it works is if you put premium fuel in the car, you know, unless you're talking about, you know, the Jay Leno jet fuel mobile, you know, that's a little different. But in most cars, this is the same way it is with Lexus. This is the way it is with BMW. This is the way it is with Volvos. All right. If you give it regular fuel, it's going to work. It's not going to blow up. It's not going to break a piston. It's not going to, you know, take a crap on you. But if you give it premium, then it's going to get better fuel economy and it's going to get more power. Requiring this car to get, you know, and it's not a race car. Once again, let's be clear here. This is not like a, you know, Ferrari. This is not a ZR1. This is a run-of-the-mill, you know, CUV that has premium appointments inside the vehicle. All right? It's nothing more than that. It's not a super-duper car.
It's not a super-duper car.
It's not. So
no, is it a direct injection?
The 2.8, I don't think it's a DI.
High compression? Do you know?
I think probably it's a 10 to something. I don't know what it is, though. I don't know off the top of my head. But, you know, that's the point I'm making.
The Audi Q5 requires premium.
Does it require it? Does it suggest it?
Yes. There's fuel requirement, premium unleaded.
I think they'll tell you otherwise. See, that's the thing, though. In certain cars, it says it requires it, and you put non-premium in there, and it works. But the problem with the SRX is that it actually – what is it? What goes wrong with it?
You get engine knock.
Well, there you go. And it was recalled for that. All right. If we're going to keep talking about that, we're never going to finish the show. So let's talk about Bob Lutz. This is a topic that I think we can all agree on. Right, Manoli?
That he's coming to the show?
Nope, that he is coming back to GM. Or maybe coming back to GM. This is according to the Daily Beast, which is an interesting name for a newspaper.
I love that name, the Beast.
The Daily Beast. According to a report from the Daily Beast, Bob Lutz is looking.
Well, reportedly GM is looking to rehire Lutz, right. And Lutz is open, you know, to the idea, but the U.S. Treasury kind of opposes the idea because of Lutz's, should we say, Lutzian nature.
I don't understand this problem. Can somebody explain this to me? I don't understand the conflict of interest here.
Lutz is not known to be an advocate of quote-unquote green cars.
Okay.
And that's pretty much all it boils down to. They think that Lutz is not suited for the best interests of what the government wants out of GM.
Well, I totally disagree. Well, I mean, wasn't he one of the
– Oh, he pushed the vote. Yeah, for sure.
He pushed it. Like, and, you know, even today, he's a big fan of that Volt technology.
But you can see Lutz in the Volt. Like, you can see that it's sexy. It's stylish. There's still Lutz in that car.
But you know what? And I think it all depends on where you put an individual like Bob Lutz in the organization, because – A, it's like what you're referring to is that, I mean, his strength is really design. He knows where the industry is going.
Well, he knows product planning too, exactly.
And so he can foresee where the need will be 5 years from now or 10 years from now, what people will be, and that's to some degree that's a weakness. Right now at GM, in terms of product planning, you know, you have a lot of young people in there right now, and you know, to have somebody with the experience of Bob Lutz would be.
I think they need more young people, though. I mean, to kind of like shake out all the, you know, all the old suits.
Well, yeah, I know, but it all depends on where you place the young people. I mean, I agree to some degree. Like for one thing, I think all the designers should be young, but. And you should bring in engineers from, you know, not, you know, you got to cross mix your talent. So you have people, engineers that you've brought in after college and you mix that up with people with experience from other industries, and that's how you get innovation.
Right.
And the same thing with Bob Lutz, how are you going to use him? You know, if you just want him as an advisor, or do you want him to have him as a board member.
I would put him as an advisor, so he's a direct say in everything.
Well, that's not usually what advisors do, though.
But he's going to.
Let's
face it, though. Like, even he, because look at Mary Barra just got appointed as the vice president of product planning. Did
she
not?
Yeah. Like, we all know that.
So so that's. You know, that's probably going to be her assignment. You know, I don't see she could get shuffled out of the picture if they decide to put Lutz back in there. But I also see Lutz maybe working with her as an advisor, where he will go on and he will push his opinions, you know, as much as he can towards future product, and really, you know, be like a voice in Barra's head and whoever else is going to be around him.
He's going to be the voice that wakes her up at night, as you know, during her dream.
Ew.
Not in that way, buddy. Don't worry. Not in that way. But she's going to. Why did you have to bring it to that? Why did you have to do that? Did you have to? That's not the way where I was going with it, and you know, you knew it too. But
yeah,
what I was gonna say before I was so rudely interrupted by a perverted mind was that really what she's gonna be, he's gonna be her worst nightmare.
No, maybe not so much. Maybe she'll be on the same page.
Well, she's going to be either on the same page or she's going to be completely incompetent. I think it's going to be one of the two.
I don't know about
that,
because she's been, you know, people have said that she's looking to pick up the pace in terms of future product. And
well, but who doesn't say that in a press release?
Well, exactly, but you know what? It still remains to be seen, you know, how her decisions are going to affect future product. We don't really know yet because, I mean, it's only been 3 weeks on the job, and it's way too early to judge anything.
Here's the thing.
But the fact that if Lutz would jump on board, it, like, could jump on board and once again be a decision maker in this whole process of product development is really tantalizing. And, you know, I hope it happens, but I see two problems with this. One, he's 79.
Right. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
How much more work do you want to do in your life at that point in time?
Well, I mean, when you look at the guy, he's like 79 going on 50.
Right. No, that's true. That's true. But really, I mean, once you've – I mean, appearances are one thing, but he's been working for 60-something years.
Some people, that's all they know how to do.
50-something years. You know, why – don't you want to, like, do other things when you're –
Dude, flying around fighter jets at 500 feet in the air gets old. It just does.
Well, there's other things to do besides that. You can try a different. You can fly a jumbo jet.
You can fly. Yeah, you could try and roll one too in midair, which is not a good idea because it's a gravity-fed tank. Anyway,
I have a feeling you have experience with that.
Yes, absolutely. I've tried rolling a jumbo jet once. Didn't work out. I ended up crashing in the Indian Ocean.
That's why you're.
No one
you're
died
the,
though.
That's why you're the way you are.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a little touched, I guess you could say. I guess the other problem would be is just the fact that, you know, maybe he'll just stir up too much conflict, you know, and nothing will get done because everyone will just be arguing.
That's a possibility. But well, I don't think he's there to argue. I think he's there to, you know, I think he knows how to lead a constructive discussion.
I don't think he's
discussion.
There to argue either. But yeah, but, you know, at the same time, you got to think a guy as
I think the word you're looking
as
for
strong of a character,
right?
As
exactly,
Bob
charismatic.
Lutz.
Yeah,
yeah, he's very charismatic. He's gonna, I believe he's gonna make sure that he's heard in the meetings, you know, and that his opinion carries on. And if it doesn't, he's gonna keep on fighting for it. So maybe he will start up, you know, an argument, or maybe people will just outright just disagree with them, and they'll also be as charismatic as Lutz, and they'll just butt heads the whole time. And especially if it's the VP of product development, or, you know, someone else on that high rank, you know, he could even butt heads with the CFO Chris Liddell about how expensive, you know, a production of a car will cost, or, you know, maybe he'll even butt heads with Mark Royce. We don't know.
Here's something that I wanted to ask last show, but I completely forgot about it, and I just popped up. It popped up back in my head, and this is not really relevant to Lutz as it is just to the executive operations of the company. Do you guys still remember Whitaker?
Big Ed?
Yeah, I mean, that guy is just—he's gone, and that's it. You know, he was there for what, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months?
Was it that long?
I think so. And that's it. He's gone. Nope. Not a word.
Well, he's on the board now. I mean, there's not really much to do other than just be on the board.
Yeah, but he used to be such a public figure. And now he's just – he's literally evaporated.
Like well, he didn't you don't like that? Think so?
No, he didn't like to be a public figure. He was an all-business guy, and I believe he's still on – he's still the chairman, so
yeah.
He's still involved. But well, he's not a limelight seeker, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I heard like internally that he's a very hands-on guy, and he was always, you know, involved in, you know, he liked to walk in on meetings and just kind of see what was going on, and, you know, meet people. Whereas guys like Ackerson, he kind of holds himself up in his office and doesn't really go out and see or meet or, you know, observe anything.
By the way, he's no longer with the company at all.
Really?
Whitaker? He's not the chairman,
no. Gordon? No, Akerson is chairman and CEO.
So Whitaker's back down in Texas.
Yep. Good old Texas.
He's probably shooting free-range deer with Ted Nugent.
How about this news? A new or a special limited edition Chevy Camaro will debut every 6 months. Hilton, what do you think?
Well, don't be looking for a ZL1 type of product, you know. Look
do you
for,
think they're milking it?
You know what? They don't really need to milk it right now. I think it's, you know, taking the – it's easy to just throw a couple new stripes on a car and call it some kind of addition.
Wheels.
Yeah, different wheels and or different paint and but that's going to attract a certain amount of people. But, you know, a lot of effort has to be in trying to sell what is there initially. You know, to take a car and, you know, when we talked earlier, when a car's first launched, you've got this pent-up demand, and especially with the Camaro, it sells like crazy. And then it starts to fizzle down, and you want to keep interest. So how do you do that? Well, this is one of the options, is to come out with some kind of striping or limited edition package. And, you know, to be honest, from the get-go, they've been doing this anyways. I mean, you know, they started with initially remember the Transformer yellow car?
Yeah, I do remember the Transformer.
And they had the Pace car last year. They've got the Pace car.
Well, they seem to have a Pace car. Like, they got two Pace cars coming up.
They have also a hardtop and a convertible.
They have the I do believe the Indy 500 one was at Chicago, yeah. But they also have the Daytona 500 one.
Right, okay. Right.
Daytona is hard top, and the Indy is the convertible.
Right, exactly. Right.
And then, you know, you've got the Synergy Green Series. You've got the
then you got the Synergy Series by itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, Synergy.
And then you got the Neiman Marcus.
The Neiman Marcus.
Ah, yeah, I forgot about that one.
XM Radio.
SSX track and that's a concept
that we might see relived as a Z28.
And maybe. Then the Red Flash.
Yeah. And the Red Flash. Well, yeah,
which
so
it's also a concept.
Right.
Yeah, but you know, bottom line is most of these limited editions are parts bin type of cars and, you know, with some kind of unique striping or wheel package. You know, you're not going to get anything more than that. I think for the real, you know, real models are going to be like that ZL1, and the Z28 is probably going to come out. And, it's a question mark whether they'll be available as convertibles or not. But, you know, as a whole, I think, you know, you want to keep things fresh. But also you want to be able to, you know, good marketing is going to sell a car. And you don't need all these special editions to try and entice people to come in and take a look at the car. And, you know, we'll be looking at the numbers for January sales and, you know, take a look at the Acadia Apple. I mean, they've been out for quite a while and the sales of these have actually picked up.
And
the Traverse.
Okay. Yeah, it broke up, so I probably couldn't hear you.
And same with the Impala. Why is it selling 15,000 units a month?
Because it's so damn cheap.
I know, but still, it's...
It's a good car. Stop knocking on the Impala.
I just said it was cheap. I didn't say it was bad.
I know what the connotation of your voice.
You're being so sensitive.
I can hear the connotation in your voice from a mile away.
No,
I'm sorry, from 500 miles away.
It's your imagination.
That's what she said.
But it's a value thing there, and the marketing people for those models are doing their job.
Right.
You know?
Sure.
So, you know, anytime you have a product that's been out for a while and its sales is actually increasing, you know, you got to look at the marketing people. They've obviously been doing their job. So,
well, plus it's a good product.
And it's a good product, yeah, and especially it's a good product. Like, if you look at the Camaro, it's a good product. You know, the engineering and design people did their work, so now it's a marketing's turn to do their work. You know, sell the product. It's a good product. Sell it. Mm-hmm. You know, don't expect putting stripes and new wheels on it is all of a sudden going to get you an extra couple of thousand.
They're literally, I think, Manoli, I agree with you. They're just trying to milk it for all it's worth and just any benefit they can pull off.
Yeah, but it's not. You're not at that stage yet where you need to milk it. Right. Like if somebody was doing this, you know, if an Impala's been around forever now, and if it was down to, you know, 50,000 units a year, you know, and they started milking it, I'd understand it. But with the Camaro, it's still a new product, and sales are good, but it's not like Impala sales.
Yeah. Would you be pissed if all they came out with were like pace car like additions? Like the Synergy and then the pace cars?
No, I like, you know, variety is nice. I mean,
I don't care. I want mine in yellow, the Bumblebee yellow with a stripe down the middle. That's all I want.
Alex, I was asking Hilton.
I wouldn't be pissed because it doesn't matter to me. Like, I mean, I've gotten a 2010 as just your standard SS, and all these new you know, themes coming out doesn't change anything for me. They're just cosmetic more than anything else. Like I said, the only real stuff is the Z01, potentially Z28, and convertibles. And, you know, it's okay because some people will, it gives people variety. But still, overall, don't expect that. If you're doing that, you're doing that to give the customer variety, but don't do that to expect your sales numbers to go up.
Well, speaking of variety, let's talk about the...
Hold on real quick, but the Ford Mustang also does the same thing too, so that I think that they also want to show that they can offer the same amount of fresh takes on the Camaro as Ford can do with the Mustang. Because the Ford Mustang always seems to be kind of coming out with some sort of new addition.
Yeah.
Not as much as the Camaro.
Yeah. Not as much as they say the Camaro's going to be.
No.
Well, I don't think they can get as many pace car deals anymore.
Yeah, that those contracts have been written for the next 2.5 years, so, you know.
That's but, like, it. I mean, you know, like that Indy pace car, it's a nice car.
Oh, it is. I love it.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, but it's $47,000 for the stick, $48,000, I believe, somewhere around there for the automatic.
Yeah, but you're not going to drive it. It's a collector's car. It's going to sit in your garage for 20 years. Mm. And then you're going to sell it at Barrett Jackson.
Okay.
Well, that's what you would do.
That is what I would do.
Well, that's not what I would do. I drive that thing.
Okay, but, you know, aside from, like, there's not a lot on that car that is that much different from you going out and buying a white convertible with a black top. You know, you can get those stripes made.
Yeah, and getting can't you get an orange stripe?
Get an orange interior. Yeah, you can buy them. You can buy them aftermarket, that's for sure. You'll be able to buy them over the counter.
No, it's not an option. Orange stripes are not an option.
Well, you see, these are a little bit different. These are like pace car stripes. The orange stripes are available, but they're rally stripes. They look a little different. These stripes go right across the front fascia, right down over the bumper, all the way down. Mm. And same with the rear. So they're a little bit different.
I think.
But the bottom line is, you'll be able to buy them.
Right.
You know. And so at the end of the day, you know, if the premium's $5,000, yeah, it's a rare car. Mm-hmm, but you know, the wheels are going to be available on other models. It's an orange interior. Now the headrest has, you know, Indy pace car stitching. I mean, there's nothing else really that is that much different than a normal convertible Camaro.
Hey guys, you know what's funny? Somebody told me today they were looking at the NASCAR pace car, NASCAR Camaro. Mm-hmm. And they told me that when you buy one of those in the trunk, they have American accent training for the Southern accent.
Get her done. I'll tell you what, man. I think the Camaro, they should have a Camaro template in NASCAR. Ford just showed off a Mustang stock car.
I was watching the NASCAR stuff yesterday.
Look, you don't have to like it. Ugh. It's just I think the Camaro needs to be a NASCAR.
But
it could look. You're not going to see that thing in in Le Mans. So it just belongs. Look, you got a pony car. You got NASCAR. These are two very American things.
But it's not a pony car. Those cars aren't pony cars.
NASCAR's never been pony car.
What the hell are they? No. You know what they need? You know what they need most of all? They need to replace NASCAR. Or, maybe not replace it because it's such a successful.
You're going to be hunted down for being so un-American for
saying. Hold on a sec. What they need is an IROC. They need the International Race of Champions. You guys remember that? Hilton probably remembers that.
IROC. Yeah, but the only problem with IROC is.
That's just something I say to myself every morning.
IROC.
The only problem with that is that the all the cars were identical.
Right. I agree. What I'm saying is they need something like that for
like Trans Am racing from
exactly.
the 60s.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Like there in racing there is a hole there, and that is that people miss, and that is from the NASCAR days when they actually raced production cars. You know, think about it. I mean, nowadays, NASCAR is, you start with a bunch of tubes welded together, and then you put the sheet metal on it, and then you airbrush whatever model you want it to be.
Exactly.
I mean, if you take the paint off it, they all look the same.
Well, by the way,
I know. It's completely, there's absolutely no trace of an actual, car, whatever it's supposed to be representing
there's nothing.
A stock car. But yeah, exactly. Just the name, though. I mean, the names go together, I feel, because they're so – both of them are very American. It's part of American culture. They go together like soup and spoons. They just do.
Hilton, when you were talking about the production of the NASCAR vehicle,
mm-hmm.
I think you forgot the fact that the stickers add about 15 horsepower each.
Especially when you put the stickers on the windshield. In fact, I heard that – I heard that – putting of a sticker on a windshield makes the car go so fast that it's illegal for NASCAR made it illegal for teams to do that. So, it's just a shame. I want to see the racing potential of a car with, just decked out with stickers all on the windshield.
Well, I think that will hinder visibility.
No, not at all.
Let's talk about the Camaro 2LS. Do we have to talk about? All right, let's talk about it. Finally,
we got it. Yeah, I mean, I know we're Camaroing ourselves to death.
Yes,
but as this is big. This is the big. Yes, but this is just as I think almost as just as big, if not almost as big, news as the ZL1.
Don't say it. No, you did not just say that.
I said it because look, you got the horsepower thing on one end, but you're gonna also have, and I know MP fuel economy is a minute thing. When you're looking at, an economy class performance car like the Camaro, but it's still a thing. And Ford happens to offer 31 mpg with their Mustang V6 that also seems to outperform the Camaro around the track. So, what the least Chevy could do is offer a 30 mpg version, don't you think? I think so.
I think so. I think that all the cars, all the V6s, should offer 30 mpgs.
Yeah, and wasn't that the goal too? Is that they were touting 30 mpg from the get go for the Camaro, and then when it finally came out, it didn't happen. They were like, it tested at 28, 29 mpg, and it kind of bummed a lot of people who actually cared that they were gonna get such a rockin' looking car with the amount of horsepower that it offers with 30 mpg.
I would just like to see a little bit more. Thought into this model. If the model truly was to get an eco Camaro, that they would take the same sort of logic that they use for the Cruze eco,
make it more aerodynamic.
They did something like this. That spoiler thing, people think it's cosmetic, but spoiler Camaros do get better gas mileage than spoilerless Camaros, so they help there, but. The stuff like, with the Volt getting the tires which save
low
gas.
Low rolling resistance tires.
Yeah.
The Cruze has those too.
Yeah, and the Cruze getting the flaps you know, that open and close.
Yeah, the louvers, the grill louvers.
Exactly, stuff like that, you know. If you're going to do an eco model, like bring all the eco technology or features that you have, bring it to the model. And
I feel that the technology like that should just be spread across the board for GM1. If they've got it, use it.
Yeah, why don't they use, you know, create an eco market, an eco brand in its own that, you know, people know that they can go to Chevrolet and, you know, any model, Chevrolet model that you're considering, they have an eco model.
Well, does it need to be labeled as an eco variant, or could it just be offered like stock?
That's what I would say.
Or even options, like if you were to get – well, I don't know if you were to give it as options because then that would make it kind of confusing
right.
in terms of
– I would just – if you have that kind of technology, Manoli, like you said, if you have it, offer it standard across the board. And guess what? You're that much further ahead of your competition.
Yeah, but then you have to raise the price.
Oh, I mean, really though?
What's the difference? You were cruise shopping. I guess the Eco wasn't around.
No, it wasn't. But its price is like $1,500 more than the LS for the feature set of a 1LT. So it's right there. There isn't a price premium.
Okay, but still, you're paying $1,500 more. You're getting more features, granted, but you're paying $1,500 more. So you would have essentially raised the base price.
Well,
of the product.
I mean, why not? For example, I think the LS, you know, shouldn't exist in the first place. I think that the 1LT should replace the LS at its price point. But for example, if you look at Hyundai, you get a vehicle, the Elantra, right? 40 miles per gallon on all Elantra models.
Stay on target, Alex.
You know, 40 miles per gallon. Now what?
Yeah. And no, it's just, yeah.
So, I don't know. It just seems like they're trying to.
Isn't it 42?
No, I think it's 40 for the Elantra.
But wasn't it, no. Didn't they have,
The asterisk joke? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's because, yeah, every model that Honda, the right. Honda Elantra comes in, every flavor, it's 40 mpg. Whereas the Cruise Eco, I mean, that's a certain variant. It gets 42. Everything else gets, what, 37?
Yeah, and then they mentioned the fact that, you know, you actually have to pay an extra $1,500.
Yeah. Yeah. It sucks. Plus, you can get an Elantra for cheaper than you can a Cruise anyway.
With rear heated seats.
But no air conditioning.
No. Air conditioning and rear heated seats.
Oh, for cheaper?
Well, the Cruise doesn't even offer rear heated seats, so.
Yeah, but it does offer air conditioning as a stock.
Well,
standard.
That's true.
Come on, let's face it. Who isn't going to buy a car without air conditioning? No matter where you live in, you're always going to end up like, say it's rainy, say it's, you know, crappy. Your car's going to get hot.
I don't know, man. You need to pay like Russia a visit once in a while.
You're not going to have air conditioning in a Russian car?
80% of Russian cars sold don't have AC.
Let's not even go there. Seriously, let's not even go there. We're derailing this so
well. I'm just telling you. I mean, you asked the question, so
stay
I'm answering.
Target.
I'm
stay
answering.
On target.
Hold on a second. Target man. If you have, you know, maybe, here in America, North America, you know, the developed parts of Europe, you know, people have been accustomed to these, you know, niceties, I guess you'd call them, these extra options and features. But when you think about it, transportation is transportation, right? And it's at the end of the day, it's sometimes, for most people.
Anyways.
For most people, it's a business decision.
Anyways.
Manoli, shut up for a second. It's a business decision, all right?
I get what you're saying, but come on, it's AC. Moving on. Going
no,
back.
Well, wait a minute.
I'm pulling this back into the Camaro.
You're
I'm
not.
Pulling it back in. I'm pulling this way out from where we came from.
Hey, who's the show host?
We're going back to the Camaro, and we're going to talk about the Camaro. And
I want to know what Hilton wanted to say.
Is listed to commence next month.
Hey, you know
what? Wouldn't have liked it,
Alex. They're going to see them in dealerships by spring 2011. We're not sure how much it's going to cost.
I have this
but
mute
you're
button here.
You're going to have the 3.6 liter LLT V6 engine still, 312 horsepower, but it only.
I really have this mute button here. You hear
that? Only seats. Not really sure what the mechanical differences are. Maybe taller gear ratios.
Is it a parts bin car?
Sort of.
Well, sort of. I mean, you got. It's pretty much the same as a Camaro, LT or LS.
A 1LT?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but, you know, if you're going to come out with a car that's intended to be economical, then, you know, consider all the stuff you have. Like eAssist, wouldn't that be great for this product?
Really?
Why not? If your intent is to save fuel mileage, then why wouldn't you have it?
Well, if you think about it, yeah.
Well, doesn't the eAssist kind of?
It's just that's why I don't think this. Why? What the heck is the point? This is a Camaro. This is not a Sonic or an Aveo. Okay, this is a Camaro. You buy the Camaro to drive it, you know, for the horsepower and for the vroom vroom, so to speak. You know, that's it.
Some people, I mean, I don't look personally. I like it because now I know that my Camaro, like, it gets better fuel economy and still offers the same engine, the same setup.
And different gearing ratios.
I'm not on different tires from any other V6 variant from as far as
so,
we know.
So why can't they do this with the LS, with the 1LT, 2LT? Why can't they do it with the same thing?
We'll see when the performance sheet comes out and like what's the big difference here? Because right now we don't know yet. And this is still, I mean, considering how close it is to launching, this is a very hush-hush topic in terms of the news.
Well, because maybe it's just been discounted as a parts bin model.
Maybe. Well, that,
I mean, like, you could have built this car yourself last year.
Yeah. Well, that, so, I mean, it's not as big as news as, like, horsepower. You know, for like horsepower instance is huge. Like that's why the ZL1 got so big is because we got a 550 horsepower Camaro now. You know, everybody rejoice, and you know this is just that's how it is. And now it's, I mean, and plus this is base model. This is, you know, it's the bottom of the barrel. But again, you only get the automatic, so you kind of lose the fun factor in driving the car.
Yeah, but, you know, the nice thing about this fifth gen is most people, it's the looks, right? That's the one. I'm impressed with the performance of my car, but by far, people are attracted to the design of the car. That's
the first
thing that hits you. So, you know, for the person that, you know, says, oh, that's a beautiful car, I'd love to own it, but, you know, I don't need 312 horsepower. I'd need something that, you know, that something where I can actually go out and look nice, look good driving it, but save some gas as well. And the 312 is there when you need it.
They should.
And something just kind of dawned on me. What if the 2LS is kind of targeted more towards the female clientele?
So
automatic transmission.
Uh-huh.
Okay. You know, I don't know a lot of girls that can drive, like, you know, girl to guy ratio. I'm not being sexist.
We're gonna get so many emails.
Whatever. Yeah, write me, manoli@gmauthority.com for all the haters out there. But just let me make my point, okay? As, you know, from personal knowledge, like, the guy to girl ratio I know from who can drive a stick and who can't, it seems to kind of lean a lot more towards guys.
Yep.
To who knows how to drive a stick than girls.
Right.
So right now you got a Camaro that's it's offered only an automatic. You get 30 miles per gallon, which is also maybe something that that females consider a little bit more than males do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing. You know, maybe this is not really targeted towards me, you, and Hilton. Maybe it's targeted towards girls.
I don't think anybody's going to be jumping for joy at 2 miles per gallon improvement. Yeah.
Well, using that rhetoric, Manoli, and of course, this is going to, in this case, you're going to have to send your emails to alex@gmauthority.com. But are they going to also offer it in pink?
That remains to be seen. So far, the only muscle car offered in pink is the Challenger.
Really? I didn't even know that.
Furious Fuchsia.
Ooh.
You haven't seen that?
No. Nope.
Man, it looks so furious.
I did see an interesting caddy CTSV today or CTS today.
Was it like a Mary Kay?
It was. I think that's what it was. It was like white and pink at the same time.
That sounds like a Mary Kay.
It looked kind of cool.
I think they stopped. I think they, because of the kind of image Cadillac is starting to take, their Mary Kay is kind of going more towards using Lincolns.
Yeah.
Than Cadillacs.
And good for good measure.
Well, I think you get a Mary Kay DTS, and yeah,
that's one of the old school cars. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the next generation Chevy, or just GM, I should say, global small pickup truck.
Yeah, buddy.
And we'll also talk about some sales numbers if we want to. Maybe we won't want to. And we'll talk about some other stuff as well. But before we do that, what I want to do is to remind everyone that we do appreciate you sharing GM Authority with your friends, sharing it with your family members, sharing it with whatever acquaintances you may have who also happen to be General Motors fans. You know, we think that, you know, if you just, you know, just kind of, hey, have you been to GM Authority yet? Have you checked those guys out? No? GMAuthority.com. That's where you go to do that. So
we are awesome.
Just exactly. So, you know, and like Manoli said, as he wakes up every morning and says to himself in front of the mirror, I rock. Well, we rock, right? So
we're also what you're listening to, people, mm-hmm. is the only GM enthusiast podcast in the bleeping world. Okay, no other quote unquote GM enthusiast website offers what we offer.
Right.
Especially and the visual aesthetics of our website. Come on, let's face it, we're pretty.
Come on, let's not even go there. Let's just, you know, content alone, on the stories alone, and our, you know, and our content. Let's just, you know, just share us with your friends. And let as many people you know as possible know about us, and we really appreciate it. You know, the show is free, and I think it's a little something you can do to help us out and to spread the GM Authority love. So, hey, I didn't go overboard with that one, did I? Like last time.
No, it's short and sweet and beautiful.
It's good, nice. All right, good. So let's talk about this next gen global small pickup truck, which was rumored that it wouldn't even show up in America, right?
Right.
For quite a while.
Or at least not in the same form that it would show up
elsewhere in the world, right?
But that's still kind of that, you know, from what Mike, I think his last name is Levine.
Oh, that guy?
That guy? Hey, did we ever have him on the show?
I don't know. Maybe like episode 7?
Oh, maybe 15? I think we had I think we had him like twice.
Isn't that Levine?
He writes for
That's it.
All right. There we go.
Mike Levine from pickup, you know, editor of pickuptrucks.com. You know, he's always on top of these things, and when it comes to pickup trucks, hence his website name.
You wouldn't think.
Yeah. Speculation of the next generation. Not just the Chevrolet Colorado, but also the GMC Canyon. They're going to be hitting America maybe by 2020. The current generation of the Colorado and Canyon are going to cease production in 2012. After that, we're going to start to see a new model. First, it's going to roll out globally, and it's going to make its debut at the 2011 Thailand International Motor Show in Bangkok, Thailand, later this year, which I think last year's show was in December, and the replacement is going to be under the Chevy badge, so it's going to be a Colorado or whatever they end up calling it. And unfortunately, the U.S. market won't be seeing much of the next generation trucks for another 2.5 years, which PickupTrucks.com also speculates that it could be assembled in Wentzville, Montana, which is you know, a move from its current New Orleans plant.
Right, in
Shreveport. Or did I say Montana? I'm sorry, I meant Missouri.
Missouri.
Oh, goodness. Goodness me. Yeah,
well, this is pretty cool, though. So it actually may end up coming here.
Yeah, but it will be, quote-unquote, different than the global variants, whatever that means. You know, that could mean that maybe it's got another airbag, maybe that it's got a different suspension setup. You know, who knows?
Right. different engines probably as well.
You know, but in my opinion, though, I think that they should build them as similar as possible. Like
absolutely.
But according to American standards, not really according to anything else, because we got, you know, the best standards.
Right.
Maybe well, offer different engines.
Here's the thing. I think what they will do, and what I think what this means, I think what's going to happen is we're going to see what Toyota does to the Tacoma worldwide, you know, and the Hilux.
Right.
You know, it's the same truck underneath, but the styling cues are a bit different. You know, it's the panel gaps, for example, are cheaper. You know, they're bigger, so it's built to a lesser standard around the world for world markets, such as Thailand, you know, compared to how it's built for the U.S. market. You know, they have the latest quality controls in place for the North American markets for the Tacoma, and you know, arguably to me, it looks the best out of all the Tacomas and Hiluxes around the world. Just because, you know, it's a more competitive environment over here and people expect more. So, you know, I think that's going to be the difference that we're going to see. At least I hope so. You know, I don't know anything, you know, to confirm it. I haven't heard anything to confirm it otherwise. So we'll have to see. But it's at least good news that it seems like it's coming. You know, and Mike, obviously, and PickupTrucks.com, those guys are on top of their game and they got their good sources and they got them down. So if they say so, it's probably –
chances are it's probably accurate.
Right, exactly. So.
Well, I just hope that they look a little bit nicer than the last cut at it.
Well, I think so. Well, yeah,
what
I agree.
What would you guys like to see in the next trucks?
Well, first of all, personally, the Silverado and the Colorado both look hideous to me today. they're not hideous, but they don't strike.
They're forgettable.
They're forgettable. And
yeah,
you know,
totally.
I'm not going to say that the Toyota, for example, Tundra is pretty, but it's got some kind of weird character about it that is
less
forgettable.
Yeah, but at least it's got a side profile that's not a house wall.
Right, yeah. So, you know, that's a good analogy, by the way. You know, and same thing with the Tacoma. If you can figure it right, obviously, I'm not talking about those work trucks that, you know, the bottom of the barrel. But if you can figure it, like they have, I think they call it the pre-runner, or the X runner, or something like that. It looks decent. So I just want some kind of something that you know makes me want to purchase it. And the current generation, Colorado or Silverado, just don't do it for me at all. So I don't know what I want. I mean, apply the, you know, take some styling cues from, you know, the Malibu, the Cruise, and the, you know, truckify it, make it look more tough. You know, I don't know.
Well, even if you sort of make it something, you know, to resemble the large pickups, you know, just the
like
baby
to share
version,
a design language.
Yeah, sort of thing, right?
Similar in size. The Colorado and Canyon are a couple inches wider, longer, and taller than the S10 and the Sonoma. But the reason that everyone thinks that the newer trucks are so much bigger is because they actually have taller tires. They have more meat on the tires.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
So they sit higher. They look bigger because of that reason. Uh-huh. But dimensionally, proportionally, they're pretty similar.
So is this going to be an all-new platform for the
Yes,
for
it's
trucks?
Going to be called what we know, it's internally called the GMI 700.
Interesting. So yes. It's not quite the 900, quite the 800.
But the 700.
Right.
And it should be known that it's going to be manufactured in Thailand. But all the trucks that are going to be sold in America are going to be built in America.
Mm-hmm.
So if everyone's going to think that, oh, you know, they're just going to import, you know, GM is outsourcing again. They're going to just import the trucks that are built in Thailand, just like how t-shirt companies bring in their clothes. It's not the case. The Thailand-built trucks are going to be, you know, for like those – the Asian countries and developing markets. In the U.S., spec trucks will be built in the U.S. So
what is it about Thailand that makes it the central assembly point for all these trucks globally. I mean, Toyota does it. I think they assemble the Tacoma or the Hilux there.
Labor's probably just really cheap.
Ford gets the Ranger done over there, I think. It's very interesting that Thailand is the whatever the new Ranger is. Whatever the
The T6.
Yeah.
So, Manoli, are you telling me I just want to back up here a second. Are you telling me that my kids' American Eagle T-shirts that I pay stupid money for are made in Thailand?
I think those are Vietnam.
Yeah, they might be Vietnam.
Okay.
Could be
Laos.
Yeah, maybe Laos. Malaysia? Could be Malaysia.
Could be Malaysia as well. That's right. Maybe even China.
Mm. All right.
Yeah, you should definitely haggle with those American Eagle guys. I don't know if they'll get you very far, but tell them, listen, buddy, I know where you guys made these shirts. I know it cost you 3 pennies to make them. Let's do some business.
I want all markets to turn, like, instead of being, corporate, like, shopping malls, just turn into bazaars. And you can just, like an Arab market, and you can just haggle your life away, you know?
Well, you know how interesting, I've done some studying on some of the Saudi cultures, and the way they haggle is they come up to you and they say, you know, like, how much for this, you know, gadget? And you say something like, you know, $3,000, right? And then you just walk away. And it's like, no, sir. Well, how about $2,500? So you just walk away. You don't even make a counteroffer. You just walk away. I find that quite different than what we do here in the States. I think it's different in Canada, or than it is in Canada as well.
Well, yeah. It's different regionally here actually.
Really?
And in the States, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, you know, if you want to, you know, depending on where you are, you know, if you want to buy something, you can go up to the guy and say, you know, you want 30,000 for this. I tell you what, you're going to take 20,000 for this car.
I'll tell you what. Here's what you are going to do. And you're going to do it. Hey, guys, thanks for being here, and thanks to all of you for listening. As we do at the end of every show, let's welcome Bob Lutz to join us next time here on GM Authority Weekly Show. And hopefully he'll take us up on that. But in the meantime, you can friend us on Facebook at facebook.com/GM Authority. You can also follow us on Twitter at GM Authority. That's all one word, GM Authority. And please do leave us a review in the iTunes store. We really appreciate the reviews that you've left so far. And if you haven't yet, please help us out. And, you know, they don't have to be positive. They can, you know, just tell the people, the good people in iTunes who are looking to download our podcast, what you think of the show. And hopefully, you know, if you have things and items that you think we can improve on, then let us know and we'll do our best to try to improve on them. But go to iTunes, search for GM Authority, and do leave us a review. And of course, last but not least, you can find the show notes for the show at weekly.gmauthority.com. You can write into podcast@gmauthority.com for any questions, comments, concerns, if you want to take us up on something. Or you can also call us at 313-355-3GMA. That's 313-355-3GMA. Hey, and that's all we got for this week. The general has been served. Please rate the show in the iTunes store. Head on over to iTunes and search for GM Authority Weekly. Is anyone-